Parshas Vayishlach is the story of Yaakov meeting his brother Esav. Torah tells us, the parsha starts, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, Yaakov sends angels, El Esav Achiv, to Esav his brother. And he said that the angels, he told the angels, and Rashi says these are actual angels, because Yaakov had, as the Torah tells us, angels that were protecting him. And he also had angels that he could use for doing various message jobs, various missions. So he sent some of these angels. As he was passing, he was coming back from the city of Haran, and he knew that he had to pass by the mountain called Mount Seir on the way to Israel. He's coming from north. Haran is north of Israel, in the region of Lower Turkey, Syria. And he is now coming through what's today Lebanon, and he's going back to Israel. So he knows that he has to pass by his brother Esav's place where he lived. And Esav is going to come and meet him. Esav also found out that Yaakov's coming back from Lavan's house in Haran. And he sends angels to find out, is Esav still hating him? Does Esav still want to kill him? And he tells the angels, make sure that you give this message over to Esav. Tell him, Im Lavan Garti, I have lived with Lavan, and I have been there until now. And also Rashi says that Yaakov was sort of excusing himself for not coming earlier to Esav, not dealing with Esav earlier. We're talking now 34 years after the incident of Yaakov getting the blessings from his father Yitzchak. And he says to the angels, make sure you tell Esav, I live with Lavan, and Vayhi li shor v'chamor, I had not so much financial success. You were upset at me for taking the blessings from our father Yitzchak because you thought that the blessings are going to make me so rich and you're not going to be as rich. He said, shor v'chamor, one ox, one donkey, a little bit of, obviously he had more than that. And as a matter of fact, the Torah tells us that he was about to give Esav a large bribe with many oxen and camels and sheep and servants and so on. But he was trying to minimize his financial success, and he was trying not to have Esav become more jealous. So there's many, many beautiful messages that come from the beginning of this week's Parsha. The first one, and I'll start with the last thing I said, is that we Jews are not supposed to, in Yiddish we say, shtech in der Eugen, we're not supposed to have our financial success as something that we are flaunting, something that we are pushing in the eyes of the non-Jewish world. We're supposed to be tzanua, modest. That's the Jewish way. We're not always that way, obviously. It doesn't mean that you can't be proud of our financial accomplishments. We're supposed to use our resources for mitzvahs, for Torah, for tzedakah, and not so much for flaunting ourselves or like holding it out there. That look, guys, how much we have. And that's, one of the complaints that people have about the Jews in general. Now, why do they have the right to complain? Of course, they don't have the right to complain. But this we learn from Yaakov. Yaakov was tzanua, he was modest. So that's a first lesson. But I want to talk about something a little bit deeper. The Rebbe asks the question, and quoting the Midrash, says that when Yaakov said Esav through his angels, he says, Im Lavan Garti, I lived with Lavan. Why was that important? Why is it necessary for him to tell Esav that he's been with Lavan until now? So Rashi, as I mentioned, makes the comment that he was sort of excusing himself. You know, if you really love your brother, and he was trying to show that he's a brother, and Esav is his brother, and he is Esav's brother, and they should have brotherly love. So if you really love me, how come you didn't come to me for 34 years? So Rashi says that he was sort of excusing himself. You know, I was busy working, and I couldn't leave, and I had a contract, and I was being paid by the day, and it was difficult with my family, and it was excusing himself. The Medrash, however, says that the word garti in Lavan garti with Lavan I lived, the word garti itself, if you just switch around the letters, it spells Taryag. Taryag is the numerical value of 613. And what he was telling Esav is that although I live with Lavan, who was an idol worshiper and a trickster and a difficult guy, and somebody who could grind you down even if you're a regular person, he completely would fill your headspace with his mishigas, with all of his craziness, with all of his persecutions. Last week's parsha we read that Yaakov, when he finally had it out with his father-in-law Lavan, he said to Lavan, "You changed my salary, aseres monim, tens of times. You changed my salary 100 times." Aseres Marashi says monim means 10. Aseres monim is 10 times 10. 100 times you changed the terms of my employment. You made me crazy for all these years. He worked for Lavan for 20 years. But what was he now telling Esav through the angels? He's saying, in spite of the fact I was keeping the 613 mitzvahs, my focus on Hashem, my focus on my spirituality was not disturbed. And this is a beautiful and important lesson for us right now. We have crazy, crazy forces that are pulling us apart. We have stresses that are not letting us sleep at night, from the anti-Semitism that we see in our streets, the anti-Semitism that we have on our screens, the anti-Semitism that we read about other people experiencing, even if we don't experience some of the stuff. It doesn't let us sleep at night. It takes up, fills our headspace. We sit down to do something spiritual. We sit down to study some Torah, and we're checking our phone. We know what's happening in Israel, what's happening here, what's happening there. And we're thinking about this, we're thinking about that. We're worried, we're confused, we're beside ourselves. And we learn from our forefather Yaakov that in spite of the fact that Yaakov was completely under the thumb of Lavan, he lived in his house, he worked for him, he was dependent on him for everything, Yaakov managed to maintain his focus. He managed to maintain his single-minded focus, determination to be a spiritual person, to be connected to Hashem. And the way Yaakov was able to do that was by recognizing and realizing that Lavan is not only a distraction, because that's one way of looking at it, you could totally ignore. Just totally ignore. I mean, have this self-discipline, which is very difficult, obviously, to totally ignore the distraction. That's one way of looking at it. What Yaakov did was even more and deeper. Yaakov said, the reason that Lavan is giving me all this tzaris is to make me a sharper and a deeper person. So that from our anti-Semitism, we learn how to be stronger, more united, more focused. That itself, the old expression is, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. We're not looking for anything that's trying to make us stronger. But the fact is that unfortunately we have all these things, and we can look at it two ways. Either let's see how much we can, we're not going to be able to get rid of it. It's happening in front of our eyes, unfortunately. We can get rid of it with Hashem's help, obviously, and with fighting back and with arguing in the right way and so on. But at the same time, we have to be productive ourselves. We have to be productive in a regular sense. We have to have our ordinary life back to ourselves. The definition of terrorism is that it wants to terrorize you, wants to fill up your headspace. Yaakov was subject to that very same terrorism on a constant basis, 20 years in a constant basis. And now we're reading how he's subject to the terrible worry that his own brother is going to come and murder him and his wives and his children and so on. So Yaakov had a lot of tzaris. And we're going to read later in the Parsha that he overcame not only this tzaris, but he also overcame this spiritual source. He fought with it, wrestled with the angel, and he won over the angel. So we derive from our forefather Yaakov all of these strengths, all of these messages that we need to be focused on our mission. We need to recognize what it is that we are at our core. And we also have to realize that the negativity is there to make us stronger. And when you look at negativity as a challenge rather than as an obstacle, your mind all of a sudden starts thinking differently. Now it's a challenge, so how do I get around it? If you think it's an obstacle, then you say, well, the door is locked, I can't go through. But if you think it's some kind of a hoop that you have to jump over, well, okay, let me see. How can I summon up the internal strength? Maybe I have to take a few steps back. Maybe I have to do a little more exercise. Whatever it is, let me figure out how to get over the obstacle in the obstacle course. So that is the next beautiful lesson. Powerful, especially timely lesson that we learn from the beginning of this week's parsha. But let's go a little deeper than that. Yaakov tells, Yaakov tells Esav that he was living with Lavan. So we've said, and then quoting the Rebbe, that the word living, garti, quoting the Midrash again, is Taryag, he kept the mitzvahs. He was focused, in spite of the fact that Lavan was trying to get inside his head and take over his headspace. As Lavan actually said in last week's Parsha, Lavan says to Yaakov, Habanos benosai, the children, the daughters, my kids are my kids, and my grandchildren are mine, and everything is mine, and you have nothing, and you have no right to tell them what to do. I'm going to tell them, I'm going to educate them. That's why we read about Lavan in the Haggadah, in the Pesach story, that he was worse than Paro in a certain sense. He wanted to take away everything, even our dignity, even our children, everything. Paro wanted to kill us spiritually. Lavan wanted to take away our insides, our kishkis. He wanted to take everything away from us, which is what the terrorists want to do. Not only do they want to take away the Jewish lives, they want to take away our claim to Israel. They want to take away our claim to being people who Hashem chose. And this is something that we really need to fight against, and something that we are successfully, with Hashem's help. With Hashem's help, we are successfully fighting and pushing back against. But the next thing that that Yaakov tells Esav is Vayili Shor Vachamor. I had Shor Vachamor, I had an ox and a donkey. So I quoted to you what Rashi says, that he was trying to minimize his financial accomplishments to Esav, so that Esav shouldn't be excessively jealous and think that, hey, look, Yaakov, he took away the blessings from our father, look what he did, he became much richer. Yeah, he was trying to play down his financial success. All right, fine. That's on the literal level. The Rebbe, however, quotes, in addition to this literal level understanding, the Rebbe quotes a midrash that says, chamor here refers to a donkey. Chamor means a donkey. Vayili chamor, he says, I had a donkey. What is he telling Esav? He's saying that I am ready for Mashiach to come. And chamor, the midrash says, is a reference to the donkey that the Gemara tells us Mashiach is going to come riding on a donkey. That's what the Gemara says. Mashiach is going to come, redeem the Jewish people, bring peace to the world, but he's going to come riding on a donkey. The Rebbe points out that we find three of our great ancestors had a donkey that they used, each one in a different way. Abraham, our patriarch, Abraham had a donkey. And the Torah tells us that when he went to sacrifice his son Yitzchak, Hashem told him, bring your son Yitzchak as a korban, as an offering. The Torah says, Vayachvosh es chamor, he saddled his donkey. And what did he do with the donkey once it was saddled? He put on top of the donkey, he put the wood, the logs, the wood, whatever he was going to make a fire. He didn't know where he's going, if it's going to be wood. And he put the knife and the different things that he needed to bring up a korban, to bring an offering. He put on the donkey. But he himself, Abraham himself, and Yitzchak together with him, they did not go on the donkey. They walked. The donkey was used as a pack animal. It was used to carry the stuff that they obviously found it difficult to carry. They were going a distance. Torah says it took them 3 days to get where they were going. So they walked, but the donkey carried the wood and the other stuff they needed. Then we find Moshe. Moshe when he, the Torah tells us, again, it's in the Chumash, when he was told by Hashem, go and tell Paro, when Moshe was still outside of Israel, go tell Paro, let my people go and worship me in the desert. So Moshe takes his family, his wife and his children. He has two sons and his wife, Zipporah and Gershom, Eliezer, his two sons. And he puts them on a donkey. And Moshe walks. He puts his wife and his two sons on a donkey. The sons were young. We read about, as a matter of fact, in that story that his wife had just given birth. We read about in the story that Moshe is neglectful to give them a bris right away. Whole story, as you might recall. So the wife had just given birth, Zipporah, and the kids were obviously, one kid was young and the other kid was just born. So he puts him on a donkey. And he, Moshe, walks. How many people go on a donkey, right? Then we find Mashiach, and Mashiach is on a donkey too. But what is Mashiach? Mashiach himself rides on a donkey. And the Rebbe explains to us that this is all symbolism. Yes, of course, the story happened the way the story happened. But the reason the story is told to us, the reason these details are given over to us, is to teach us a deeper lesson, obviously. Every story that we have in the Chumash happened, absolutely. We believe in the literal story of the Chumash. It's not an allegory. It's not a myth. It's not a semi-mythical figure, as I once heard from somebody. I don't know what semi-mythical means. It's mythical. It's not mythical. It's but well, a semi, no such thing, God forbid. We believe in the literal stories that are told in the Chumash. But the reason that they are recorded, because many, many stories happen, obviously, over thousands of years. The reason they're recorded and the language with which they're recorded is intended to be instructive. It's intended to teach us a message, a lesson, as the word Torah itself means, instruction. And the reason that the Torah therefore tells us specifically these details, that Avraham had a donkey, and he put his son on a donkey, and Moshe had a donkey, and he put his wife and kids on a donkey, and the Mashiach is going to have a donkey, the Gemara says, is to teach us the various stages in our perfecting, elevating of the physical world around us. The word donkey, chamor, is related to the Hebrew word chomer, which means materialism. That's how you say materialism. Stuff is chomer. And chamor is the emblematic animal that is materialistic. It's used as a pack animal. It's used to schlep stuff. Today we would say a truck. What do you have a truck for? A car, you have for pleasure. You go places. But why would you have a truck unless you have stuff? You don't have a truck to go, you know, to the store to buy something. You don't have a truck to go on and visit your parents. You have a truck, I'm talking about a real truck. A truck is used to schlep stuff. If you don't have stuff, why would you have a truck? So that's the symbolism of a donkey. A donkey is symbolic, emblematic of your stuff, of moving your stuff around, of elevating. Now, what's the moving your stuff? Another way of saying that is elevating it, making your materialistic possessions no longer on the bottom basement plane of life, but using them for spiritual purposes and elevating the world. This is the purpose of ourselves, of why we're here in this world. This is the purpose of the Torah. The purpose of Hashem taking our neshamas, taking our souls from the highest of heights. And Tanya, we talk about, Chassidus, we talk about where neshamas come from the lowest level of the world of Atzilus, and really they come higher than that. Highest of heights, the neshamas, Malchus of Atzilus, and even higher than that, is the real true source of the Jewish souls. And Hashem takes our neshama and he puts it into a body and he gives us tzaris like Yaakov had, and he gives us tzaris like we have, and so on. You know, hopefully we are able to grow and able to overcome the tzaris and overcome the different trials and tribulations and obstacles that are in our life on a constant basis, and the Yetzirah, all kinds of stuff. And the reason that Hashem does that is in order for us to have the ability to take the physical world, the material world, the physicality of our situation and refine it and elevate it. We are supposed to be miners in a gold mine. We're supposed to take the physical world, elevate it. How do we elevate the physical world? Very simple. Go about your life and live your life according to Torah. That everything that you touch becomes holy. Everything you touch becomes elevated, becomes spiritual, becomes clarified, purified. Another way to say the same thing is, our job is to proclaim through our actions that God is the boss of the world. So when someone looks at us, they say, wow, that person is a believer. Wow, that person proclaims just by the fact that they live their life the way they live, the way they walk, the way they talk, what they do, how they do. I can see they believe in God. I can see that God is directing them. I can see they are a godly nation, a godly person. That's our job. Our job is to proclaim to the entire world through the way we act and through what we do that Hashem is the boss of the world and the world doesn't run itself. This is very powerful. That's why we were put into the material world, in order for us to be the lighthouse of the world, or Lagoyim Nesaticha, the light unto the nations. Primarily and first, we got to be a light unto ourselves. Obviously, we got to do the right thing ourselves, and then we can influence others. So that's what it is. We're supposed to be shining points of light in the world, in the words of one of our former presidents, whoever wrote that speech for him. So we are supposed to be living examples of Hashem's presence in the world. That's what it means to refine materialism of the world, the spirit, the materialistic aspect of the world, to make the rest of the world realize, in the language that we say in the Aleinu prayer, that the entire world should realize and come together and worship Hashem together. Now, that process, the Gemara tells us, doesn't happen in a day. That process of refining the world is a big, big job. That process, as a matter of fact, the Gemara says, happens over 6,000 years. 6,000 years takes to refine the world to the point where Mashiach is going to come. And the Gemara actually breaks it down to 2,000, 2,000, 2,000. The first 2,000 years from Adam, from creation, complete chaos. The language of the Medrash and the Gemara, it's tohu, chaos. People were just not ready. Little babies in their attitude. The second 2,000 years, Torah. So the first 2,000 years called tohu, chaos. The second 2,000 years, now we're up to 4,000 years of the 6,000, Torah. People have the capacity, the human being has the capacity to incorporate the messages, the lessons, the attitude of Torah into their life, and to become a mensch, to become an adult, to become, instead of a child who is selfish, a child who is self-absorbed, a baby. You cannot teach philosophy to a baby. It doesn't work. A baby understands only one thing, and a child a little bigger than a baby understands only one thing, and that's immediate gratification. If I can help myself and I feel better myself, then yes, I'll do whatever you ask. You give me a candy, yes, I'll come and I'll show up and I'll do this. You want me to clean my room? I want you to give. You want me a thing? Or give me a candy. Give me a lollipop. Give me a this. Give me an allowance. Give me a car. Give according to the age of the child. In other words, this is called chaos. Chaos means lack of harmony, lack of understanding, lack of elevation, lack of bringing Hashem's presence in the world. It's all about me. All about me is chaos, because we understand on a very simple level that when people are only about themselves, so what do you have? Can you have peace in the world? Of course you can't have peace, because everybody wants something else. So if everybody is about themselves, then by definition, the result is going to be a war. Everybody is going to be fighting in the moment, for whatever it is comes into their head that they feel that they need. That's chaos. So the first 2,000 years, the Gemara says, the world wasn't ready. They were infants. They were juvenile. They were not grown up. Came Avraham. And Avraham is the first person, Chumash tells us, who was able to make an impact on the world and actually attract hundreds and thousands of people to believe in monotheistic belief. There were great monotheists before Abraham. For example, Adam Harishon, and Noach's son Shem, and Shem's great-grandson Aver, and other great people, and Hanoch, and Mesushelach, and other great people. There were a number of great tzaddikim, but they were not able to attract to themselves a following. And they were not able to influence other people. And Avraham is the first person that we find was able to actually make an impact on his surroundings and elevate not only himself, but his surroundings. Having said that, Avraham began the process, but it was still in its infant stages. And therefore, the Rebbe explains, Avraham's interaction with his donkey was that he was only able to put firewood, inanimate objects, on the donkey. And which is an analogy. Again, it's an illusion. Yes, the story happened literally, but the Torah is teaching us at deeper levels, as I'm saying, that Avraham was able to begin the process of elevating the material world, of making the human being aware that Hashem is the boss, but only in a very baby steps manner. And the way that the Torah tells this to us poetically is he put the firewood on the donkey. And again, donkey is symbolistic of materialistic world, because the word donkey is chomer. So he was able to start the process. And in fact, the Gemara tells us that Avraham's life begins at the beginning of the 2,000 years of Torah. Avraham was born in the year 1948 from creation. He became aware of Hashem's presence, not from birth, because he was born into an idol-worshipping family. It took him, according to Rambam, many opinions, is 40 years. So 1948 plus 40 is just about, other opinions say 3 years. Rambam quotes 40 years. So it's just about the beginning of the 2,000 years, and therefore Avraham ushers in the second stage of 2,000 years of Torah, meaning the ability for humans to already become mature in our interaction and our understanding of the material world around us, that really it's Hashem, it's God who is creating, and therefore who is expecting certain things from us. So that was the beginning of a process. Then comes Moshe. Moshe lived 400 years after Avraham. Moshe continues the process, but steps it up a huge level. What's the huge level? He brings us the Torah. Obviously, Hashem gave the Torah, right? But Hashem gives the Torah through Moshe. As a preparation for receiving the Torah, Moshe takes a donkey and he goes from Midian, where he is, to Egypt, and he puts his wife and kids on the donkey, not himself. Again, a step up. Now, his wife and kids, as I mentioned earlier, his wife had just given birth, his kids were infants, so they needed to be on a donkey. But it's a poetic way of saying the Torah is teaching us that it's a step up. It's not yet yourself, but at least it's your family. At least it's the people around you. It's not everybody yet. Then comes Mashiach, and Mashiach is the 2,000 years. The Gemara tells us the world is 6,000 years. First 2,000 is chaos. Infantile, juvenile, not able to be selfless, self-absorbed, only fighting with each other. Second 2,000 years is Torah, able to incorporate Hashem's presence into our life. The last 2,000 years, and of course, we're now in the year 5,784, so we're pretty much at the end of the last 2,000 years. But the last 2,000 years of the 6,000 begins the possibility for Mashiach to come. And when Mashiach finally arrives, the symbolism of Mashiach is he's going to be himself riding on a donkey. Now, again, it doesn't have to be a literal donkey. It's symbolic. But what it means is he will be completely mastering, and not just he himself, but he will be teaching us. And we ourselves, as a Jewish nation, will have mastered riding on the donkey. We'll have mastered our relationship with the material world. We will no longer be subject to materialism. We will recognize that the world, the materialistic world, is a vehicle. It's a mechanism. It's firepower. We're no longer going to be in love with gasoline. We're not going to be holding. Right now, what we do is we take all kinds of receptacles, all kinds of things, our houses, our bank accounts, our safe deposit boxes that nobody uses anymore, whatever it is, and we fill it with materialistic stuff. Hashem wants us to have materialistic stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. But Hashem also wants us to use and to recognize that we're not supposed to be storing gasoline. We're supposed to have gasoline to put it into the tank of our car. And even that is no longer a good analogy because now everything is electric. But we're supposed to have fuel in order to be able to do good stuff with it. The goal isn't to amass energy or fuel. The goal is to take the energy and to actually harness it, to actually use it. And Mashiach is going to teach us this lesson. And as we become more refined in our attitude, as we become more clear about what our relationship with the physical world is, that itself is the process of bringing Mashiach. That's what it means, Lehavi Liyimot HaMashiach, to bring ourselves to the time of Mashiach coming. Mashiach is going to be a human being, right? A great tzaddik, who is going to be the ultimate coach, the ultimate leader, the ultimate king, the ultimate teacher and leader and tzaddik. But doing what? Doing what? The answer is teaching us Jews, how we're supposed to work with the physical world, what we're supposed to do with materialism, where our head should be. And the first thing that we do is, in the language of our forefather Yaakov at the beginning of this week's Parsha, when we're faced with a lavan, we're faced with stuff, we're faced with obstacles, with individuals, with situations that are threatening to swallow us up, to take away our connection, the answer is im lavan garti. We have to look to the Torah. We look to the 600 garti, again, is 613, Taryag. We look to the mitzvahs. And with following the recipe, you don't have to be a genius. You don't have to invent. All you got to do is follow, open up the cookbook, follow the recipe. Just go step by step. Step number one, you open the Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law. It says when you wake up in the morning, you say this, say Moda Ani Lefanecha, thank you Hashem. Then you get dressed. Here's how to get dressed. It says so in the Shulchan Aruch, here's how to get dressed. And then you say davening, and then you go to eat, and here's how to make a bracha. And then you make a bracha after you eat, and then you go to work, and here's what you're supposed to do, and here's how to be honest in your work, and here's how to study a little Torah, and so on and so forth. We have set up for us a complete recipe, a complete step-by-step guide. And this is what we learned from our forefather Yaakov, that this is how we go through our life, not only not getting swallowed up by materialism, not getting swallowed up by anti-Semitism, not getting completely knocked off the rails and unable to sleep at night because of all of our enemies who are real, who are unfortunately real, but we actually can rise higher and grow and rule over them to the point that they become like the Esav in this week's Torah portion, that Yaakov had hoped to actually rehabilitate. Imagine that, rehabilitate the Esav. So this individual who's now trying to kill you, we Jews have the ability not only to have them stop their murderous intentions, but actually become, in the language again of the Torah, the amdu zarim v'ra'u tzonchem. Strangers will come and take care of all your physical needs. Strangers will come and take care of everything. So you'll be free to do mitzvahs, free to study Torah, free to daven all day, say Tehillim all day if you want. You're not going to have to worry about anything because all of those individuals who were previously your enemies, Zarim, strangers, will come and they will look to support you. They'll look to. I saw just yesterday on Facebook, this is all, stuff that we're looking for glimmers of good news, right? So there is some Christian family or a group of Christians who moved to Israel, and they're living in the West Bank in Samaria. They call it Samaria, which is the real name, Shomron. It's not the West Bank. It's Yehuda v'Shomron. And the reason that they're living there, I saw, maybe you saw the same story, is because they recognize that even though the Jews, that the same Arabs are the same enemies of the Jews who are living in the Shtachim, what's called the West Bank, you know, the Shomron, but they don't have a security fence. So the Jews in Gaza, in Otef Gaza, the envelope around Gaza, the kibbutzim and the towns that were unfortunately subject to this terrible massacres October 7th, those Jews, they had a fence between them and Gaza. But the very same people these Christians realize are living in the West Bank. And the Jews living there have no fence. So they have moved to these towns in order to protect the Jews who are living in Shomron, in the West Bank. So this is, I thought to myself, look at this. This is Va'amdu Zarim Verod Sonchem. These are strangers who are coming and who are protecting Jews in Israel. So it's a step, you know, we're looking again for positive news, positive things. So anyway, this is the story of this week's Torah portion. Yaakov is teaching us that that Hashem is giving us this amazing gift called the Torah. Hashem is giving us a recipe for rising above. And of course, tonight and tomorrow and Sunday, the 19th and the 20th of the month of Kislev, today is the 18th, which means tomorrow is the 19th, Shabbos. The 19th of Kislev is the Rosh Hashanah for Hasidus. This is the day that the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitch Rebbe, was let out of Tsarist imprisonment. And the Alter Rebbe, he was imprisoned because on charges of treason. He was suspected of treason because, unfortunately, other Jews, and today we see all these parallels in history, has never stopped repeating itself. Today we have also some tsarists from some of our fellow Jews who are not understanding exactly what they're supposed to be doing and are asking for this kind of ceasefire and that kind of ceasefire and all the, you know, I don't have to tell you what's going on out there. But the Alter Rebbe anyway was arrested by the Tsar of Russia and accused of treason. He was kept in prison until he was released with lots of honor on the day of the 19th of Kislev. And he finally got home on the 20th of Kislev. And it's considered to be the Rosh Hashanah for Hasidus. And what does it mean, the Rosh Hashanah for Chassidus? Just as the Rosh Hashanah, which we have every year, our Rosh Hashanah on the first day of Tishrei, gives us energy for the entire year. And that's the day that Hashem, based on our actions, determines how much materialistic blessing we're going to have. That's what we believe. Hashem writes us in the book of good life and gives us energy for the, and then it's up to us to bring it down every single day. The same is true. The Rebbe's right about the 19th of Kislev, that Hashem gives us spiritual powers to be able to convert the world around us into spirituality. So on the day of Yutas Kislev, we wish each other a kesiva v'chasima tova. We should be written and inscribed for good energies and for powerful energies in limud ha-chasidus, in the study of Chassidic philosophy, v'darkei ha-chasidus, and the application of that philosophy to our life. Because studying it by itself is not sufficient. It's a wonderful thing, and you get reward for study. But, of course, our job is to take what we learn and to apply it to our actual life, and that's called darkei ha-chasidus, the actual application of these beautiful messages that we learn from our Rebbes.